We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Who's a closer? What's closer? Where, when, why, how? I've got Rick Graham on the line. We're going to answer all those questions, although probably mostly just who, right after this on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hello and welcome, everybody, to the Sunday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Eric Halterman, your host, and my guest for today is Rick Graham of Pitcher List. Rick, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric. It's going well, you know, trying to navigate through all the injuries that have happened in the first 2 weeks here in the fantasy world. But yeah, it's, you know, everything's going well.
How's your arm? Are you considering any tryouts or no?
I mean, my shoulder's pretty cooked, but yeah, I might at this point, you know, maybe in June, I might have to go, you know, down to Fenway and see if they need any arms down there.
Yeah, I think everybody should be stretching out their arms, seeing what they got at this point, the way things are going. But right. Rick, I'm excited to have you today. We have got a reliever-filled show, and you just so happen to be a reliever expert. What's your title? Reliever manager or something at Pitcher List?
Yeah, reliever manager, senior analyst at Pitcher List. I work with the, you know, we do put out a daily bullpen depth chart. I manage, and then, you know, I put out three articles each week with, you know, holds ranking, saves ranking, save plus hold ranking. So pretty much anything reliever in the reliever landscape, I cover over there.
That is excellent news, because I've got a lot of questions about some confusing bullpens today. We may also get to a brief discussion of our Tout Wars NL teams. We are competing there together. Maybe we'll have a little reliever focused strategy talk at the end. How do you manage your relief squad in season in a league like that versus other leagues? But first, we got to get to some headlines. And, well, we've got another injury headline as things go. Another pitcher who throws hard is hurt. This time it's Bobby Miller. He is heading to the injured list. In fact, was already placed on the injured list yesterday with right shoulder inflammation. Supposedly not severe and no surgery needed. So maybe this is sort of just the Dodgers being cautious, but I'm pretty sure this is a pretty real injury. And while it's not an elbow tear, we're not very happy about it.
No, it's unfortunate. I was, you know, very heavily invested in Bobby Miller this year. And then they, after the last two starts, you could, you know, something was clearly not right there. The velo was down a little bit, but nothing concerning. But yeah, now that the shoulder inflammation, that's, you know, hopefully this is just a minor, you know, minimum stint, maybe a little bit longer. You know, as long as he's healthy for the, you know, last two thirds of the season, that's, you know, all that really matters now.
Yeah, the Dodgers are sort of able to manage for the playoffs, I think, since the start of the season. Well, they need to, you know, actually win their games, but they're doing that. They're 11-6 so far. So they definitely can afford to say, Bobby, we want you here in October and we don't need you here in April. What do you think is going to happen in that spot in the Dodgers rotation for the next, you know, at least a few weeks? Is there anybody out there that we're going to want to pick up?
You know, I'm sure we're going to see more or more either starts or length from Ryan Yarbrough. He's going to get, you know, a healthy amount of innings there. You know, Emmett Sheehan's working his way back too. That's another name that makes sense to pick up that rotation spot. But yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, it gives someone like Gavin Stone a little bit more helium, I guess, and he's kind of now locked into a rotation spot there for at least another couple starts. He looked pretty good last night. He's, you know, an interesting name there. But yeah, it's the Dodgers, you never know, because they have a ton of depth, but they also, you know, they do this, you know, there's a lot of injury, you know, IL stints going on. So it's something to watch, because anyone in that rotation could have, you know, you could get a win from them any night given how good that offense is.
Yeah, it's almost a situation where like you said, you'd pick up anybody in a deep enough league if they're getting a start in with the Dodgers. Emmett Sheehan, you mentioned, is an interesting candidate, although he was placed on the 60-day. Which is weird this year, I think, because the Dodgers had that Seoul series. The 60-day timeline for them ends a little bit earlier, but it's still going to be at least mid-May. So it's going to be a few more weeks. He's probably not going to be the one to get this immediate opportunity, but he's a good name to mention because the Dodgers are going to keep cycling guys through these final two spots, I'd imagine, and he's going to show up at some points. Other injury news, we've got back tightness for Chris Bryant, and that didn't take too long, and he was not performing at the levels you would have wanted before that. I don't think he's yet hit the injured list. This one was back tightness after he crashed into a wall, I think, so it wasn't just soreness cropping up already. I guess theoretically, if somebody else starts getting playing time in Colorado, we should care because it would be in Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, could open up some time for Elihoris Montero. Perhaps we even see Sean Bouchard come back up and get a chance, because he was kind of a name that it sounded like he was going to be in the lineup every day. And, you know, now he's in AAA. So, I mean, yeah, there's some names to keep an eye on, especially when they're playing, you know, if they have a week where they're playing at home, definitely worth the stream. But yeah, it's unfortunate with Bryant, just trying to, you know, just want him to stay healthy and see what he can, you know, if he can, you know, reclaim that magic he had in Chicago. It's been a rough stint in Colorado for him.
Yeah. And with his poor start, even when he was healthy, I mean, at this point, you know, he had seen his draft stock fall quite a bit, because in theory, you should be able to take a 32-year-old former MVP who's playing half his games at Coors and say, well, at least while he's on the field, I'm really going to want that. And that hasn't even been the case. So hard to be optimistic about the rest of the season for Bryant. Should also mention Rafael Devers. He's sitting yet again. I guess you're pretty close to this one up in Boston. Do you have any local insight on this? Do you think it's just going to be 3-4 games and then he's good to go?
They're being, you know, coy with what if he's going to need an IL stint or not. Does sound like he's going to avoid the IL, but it's one of those situations with it. I mean, if this is going to keep lingering, it's like, why not just, you know, get 15 days, take some time off, get that thing right, and then, you know, come back full strength or close to full strength, because, you know, he missed a couple of games earlier in the season, and now it's back, you know, it's 4 games in a row now. I wouldn't be shocked if we see an IL stint tomorrow. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's anything serious yet, so it's just kind of a wait-and-see approach here. And yeah, they can't afford to lose another bat in that lineup with Story already down and, you know, a couple other guys banged up. It's already getting kind of bleak here in Boston.
Yeah, if it turns out he does need an IL stint, I guess they can backdate it a few days because he's already missed time. He'd only missed an additional week from whenever they place him on the injured list. And maybe any potential replacement would then only get a week's worth of at-bats. You mentioned injuries have already hit that Boston infield, so things are getting thin. What kind of names are we getting down to if Rafael Devers starts hitting the injury list also? Not ones we want on our fantasy team, probably?
It's probably going to be Bobby Dalbec. And, I, you know, it depends on, you know, he's struggled in the past 2 years here, but he does have a history and track record of, you know, crushing left-handed pitching. So if I don't know exactly who the Red Sox face next week, but if they do have a, you know, left-handed heavy, you know, group of pitchers they're about to face, then Dalbec can be kind of interesting in deeper leagues. But yeah, other than that, it's, you know, with David Hamilton at short, second base is still rotating between, you know, Pablo Reyes and Emmanuel Valdez. There's no real, not a ton of fantasy value right now in that infield. Hamilton's interesting if he can get on base at a high enough level just because of the steal factor. But I don't know if that's going to happen with him. He still hasn't really done much with the bat at the major league level in limited time.
You mentioned if Dalbec gets to face a run of lefties, the games next week for the Red Sox, one lefty on the schedule. So yeah, not so exactly Bobby Dalbec time. Those games, they have one series against Pittsburgh. They would have had a second lefty probably in that series, except Marco Gonzalez has hit the injured list with a forearm strain. I mentioned this one not really because of Gonzalez himself, because, you know, he's probably on some fantasy teams, but he's not exactly crucial to them. But hey, is this maybe, is this Paul Skeens' time? Is this what we were waiting for? There's an opening. And I think they may even be on the same schedule. Is that what our note here is saying?
I know Skeens and Falter were on the same schedule the last time they pitched. And I was thinking that was, you know, it was Skeens and Jared Jones, but then Skeens got rained out and got moved back. But I do think that, you know, their next opening is Friday. I think that could line up for Skeens to potentially make his debut. I mean, I feel like a lot of teams that would be the case. The Pirates, I don't know, they might be a little bit more conservative here, but this is a team that's winning games right now. They're playing pretty well. There's some hope with that rotation with, you know, Jones, Keller, even Martin Perez is throwing well. Falter's been, you know, fine. So if they could add Skeens to that rotation, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, this is a pretty deep lineup, pretty deep rotation. Bullpen's, you know, at the top is at least pretty good. So yeah, there's, you know, there's hope in Pittsburgh. And Skeens, I wish they would just, you know, make that move right now, because he's just too good to be in AAA. I mean, he's not really showing much there. So get, you know, whatever arm, you know, before his arm falls off, just get him in the majors and let's see what he can do.
Yeah, definitely officially on Skeens' watch at this point. I would have loved to have seen him get closer to five innings in his previous minor league start. Nice. 3 1/3. And I think he was just 3 innings in his first one. So if he does arrive, you know, maybe expect 4 and then maybe 4 again and then 5, but he's going to give you some really good 4-inning starts if that's what's happening. And like you said, I mean, the rate pitchers are getting injured, especially ones who throw incredibly hard. It's kind of irresponsible to have him throwing innings in the minors. It's a waste. It's not good for anybody. So if he's at all good enough, let's get him up there. A couple more bits of injury news just to round up quickly here. Carlos Correa, he had been diagnosed with an oblique strain. That's been changed to a mild intercostal strain. He's still on the injured list, but mild is a good word. So I guess that's good. Would expect to see him not with a several months long absence, certainly there, just maybe a couple weeks. Jordan Montgomery, he'll be ready for his season debut on Friday. So that's good news for anybody who drafted him while he was still a free agent. And then finally, Robert Stevenson, he exited his rehab appearance with an injury. I believe we don't yet have confirmation of what that injury is, but likely related to the shoulder injury that he was dealing with in the first place. This ties into our main topic of the day. It will affect which group the Angels bullpen falls into. I think I was getting ready to stash Robert Stevenson, expecting that, hey, he's going to be back in a week and he's going to take Carlos Estevez's job 2 weeks after that. I guess Estevez is kind of safe.
Yeah, for now. I mean, there's just no competition there. This one pains me because I was high on Stevenson. I have him stashed in a lot of places where I have IL spots. He was able to only throw 4 pitches, 4 balls last night. I guess if there's one silver lining at all, it's that the velocity looked normal. It looked like his velocity when he was with Tampa Bay last year. But clearly something's still not right. Hopefully it's just a little bit of a minor setback and we could still see him in May or June. But yeah, it's definitely concerning that he couldn't make it through more than one batter last night.
So yeah, anybody with Carlos Estevez, good for you, I guess. Oh, let's do one more headline. The headline just being Max Meyer is awesome from Uncle Ted here. Yes, he was in his start last night against Atlanta. 7 strikeouts, no walks, 1 earned run, 6 hits. He had looked pretty good against the Angels and Cardinals, but if he's doing it against a team like Atlanta as well, Got to be pretty excited about Max Meyer, just for at least as long as he is able to remain in that rotation coming off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, and they're going to get some, you know, they're going to get Garrett back. They're going to get Cabrera back. And I thought Meyer was the guy, maybe the odd man out, you know, at the start of the season. But I mean, obviously, AJ Puck hasn't pitched well. He's probably going to move back to the bullpen when those guys return. And even, you know, Weathers and Trevor Rogers, I think one of those guys probably, you know, gets out of the rotation too. So I think Meyer, you know, is looking like he's pretty safe in that rotation as long as he's, you know, healthy.
Yep, definitely looking like that to me. So we're going to move on to our look at just who exactly is a closer and who's stuck in a committee and who's somewhere in between. Do we have words for that? I'm not really sure. But first, here is a message from our sponsor, Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards with every single ticket purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we're back here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm joined by my guest, Rick Graham of Pitcher List, who is a reliever expert, which is great news because I want to talk to some relievers today. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do for this next segment is look at all the bullpens and just say whether or not they've got a closer or not. We're going to delay on the ones that don't or have some interesting seasons. But first, I want to run down a very quick list of, I think it's about 12 guys who I have listed as obvious closers. Now, I was being pretty conservative with this, so I think all of them you're just going to say, yep, he's a closer, and we'll move on quickly. There are a few guys who listeners might think should be in this group, but again, I was being pretty conservative because I want to split out the guys who have anything really worth talking about here. So are you ready for me to run down the list? You just give me a yes or you slow me down here. Ready?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Atlanta, Raisel Iglesias.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, velo's a little bit down. Changeup's still great. Swing and miss will come. He's locked in there.
All right. Baltimore, Craig Kimbrel.
For now, yeah, a little concerned. The velo's down 3 miles per hour. He's, you know, he's sitting at like 92. He was at 91 last time out. A little concerning. Still early. Maybe he can get back, but I still think, I mean, he's still pitching well. He's making it work with the diminished velo. So I think he's fine for now.
Yeah, not our favorite closer, but definitely is a closer.
Yeah.
Probably same thing for Kenley Jansen in Boston.
So, yeah, same thing. Velo's down about 3 miles per hour. He's got a lingering back problem where, like, one day he's able to go, the next day he's not. So that's, you know, that's frustrating for him and for, you know, fantasy managers alike. But yeah, he's the guy. And if he's healthy, if he's available that day, he's going to close out games for Boston.
All right. Moving on to Cincinnati, Alexis Diaz. He's the guy.
Yeah. Again, it's another, like, for now, I think there's better options there. But yeah, he looks more like the second half Alexis Diaz so far. Yeah, a little concerned with, you know, how he, you know, performs the rest of the season. But for now, he's locked in there.
I want to follow up on this one. Some better options in Cincinnati, like somebody you think that we should be getting now, or just somebody we think we'll be picking up in July?
I feel like for as far as relievers go, Fernando Cruz has, you know, been pretty electric as a, you know, setup guy there with good fastball splitter combo. The splitter gets a ton of swing and misses. You know, Lucas Sims has looked pretty good. The slider is still, I mean, he throws a ridiculous slider with the spin rates he gets on that thing. He's, you know, if he's healthy and he's right, he's a really good reliever. And then, you know, someone from the rotation who I always thought would be just an elite reliever is Graham Ashcraft. I feel like that's essentially like Emmanuel Clase. If he were to be in the bullpen, that's like Emmanuel Clase-esque stuff from him with his cutter slider combo. So, you know, if he ever lost his rotation spot and they move into the bullpen, I think that could be a very interesting reliever to keep an eye on.
That's a good name. I hadn't heard that thought, but it makes sense given what you're saying. So Alexis Diaz maybe a little bit closer to the Craig Kimbrell and Kenley Jansen camp than we might give credit for, and not as close to the next guy on here, Emmanuel Clase. He's the closer in Cleveland.
Yeah, there's nothing, no concern here. Velo's down just a tiny bit, but he's fine. He's getting a little bit more swing and miss this year as well so far, so that's good to see.
All right, and then halfway through our list of their definitely closers is Josh Hader in Houston. There was maybe some thought that Ryan Pressly would be a quarter of a closer, but no, it's just Josh Hader, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, Pressly and Abreu have both struggled too. It's, you know, Hader's fine. He's been fine. He's throwing his slider more. I'd like to see his secondaries be a little bit more effective because he's losing velo at this point in his career. But, you know, he's fine. There's nothing really... nothing really I'd be concerned with Hader at this point.
All right, moving on to another guy. Probably not many concerns here. The Mets, Edwin Diaz. He's just a closer.
Yeah, it's, you know, glad to see him back and, you know, doing what he does. He's high strikeout rates already. He's back. He's fine.
All right, sticking with it, New York, the Yankees, Clay Holmes. There's been times when he was not quite a closer, but I think I felt comfortable keeping him in the obvious closers bucket. Is that true?
Yeah, I think he is. I think, you know, Aaron Boone has a lot of trust in him. He feels a little miscast as a closer still. He's great at getting ground balls, but he doesn't miss a lot of bats. I feel like Ian Hamilton makes more sense as a closer, but Boone loves Holmes. I don't think there's any reason or there's any way we see Boone make that switch unless Holmes has like a disastrous, you know, couple of weeks.
All right, and nearly there, we're in San Diego. Robert Suarez didn't look like he was guaranteed to be the guy before the start of the season, but at this point, definitely closer, conventional, all that.
Yeah, I mean, no complaints here. He was one of those guys going after pick 200, and yeah, congrats if you took him as your second closer at that point, because he's like clearly the kind of one of the steals of the draft so far as closers go.
Definitely. How about in San Francisco, Camilo Duvall? There's been times when we thought maybe the Giants don't actually use closers, but right now, Duvall, true closer?
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, I like Duvall. I don't know if he's ever going to be like, you know, in that Edwin Diaz, Felix Bautista, prime Josh Hader tier, but he's fine. He's a good closer. He's pretty safe there, I feel.
All right, and then the last two in St. Louis is Ryan Helsley. Closer, normal closer, or a committee lead?
It looks like they're using him just like they used him in September as the sole closer there, and he's been awesome so far. Slider usage up a little bit, getting more swings and misses. He's been great.
All right, and then the last true closer, Kyle Finnegan in Washington. I think he is still a true closer as much as Hunter Harvey fans don't want him to be, myself included.
This is the one that I was a little bit like, all right. He is, as you know, they're not pushing Harvey to be the closer yet. He's still working in the eighth inning. But I feel like it's almost a matter of time here with Finnegan. His stuff's very, like, he'd be a decent middle reliever for most teams. It's, you know, Harvey has much better stuff. It's just about, you know, can he stay healthy? Because Harvey took the role over last year and then he got hurt, and then Finnegan, you know, ended up back in the role and finish with 30 saves. So, I think it's just, you know, a matter of time before Harvey takes over there.
All right, so we've got 12 guys who are closers now, even if, as you noted, there's legitimate concerns about several of them, whether that's somebody coming up behind them or loss of velocity, etc. But if you got one of those guys, at least for now, you'll continue getting saves. Then we have a group of four who I think would have an obvious closer, but that guy is currently injured. In Arizona, Paul Sewald is still out with his oblique injury, although not for too much longer. In his absence, Kevin Ginkle has been a closer, right? Not just a committee guy, but what do you think happens when Sewald gets back?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting one now because, you know, Sewald's a free agent at the end of the year. Ginkle's probably, unless they either re-sign Sewald or go after another closer, I think Ginkle's the Diamondbacks closer for, you know, the next 2 years after this. So I do kind of wonder if Ginkle, he's been great so far. If he continues pitching well, I do wonder if they just, you know, when Sewald gets back, they just keep Ginkle in the closer role. You know, Sewald's worked as a setup guy before. It's not like it's not that crazy to think that he would, you know, not be the closer there. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Ginkle keeps throwing well. I think that, you know, when Sewald does return, don't go dropping Ginkle. Drop Ginkle just because Sewald's back. I think you got to kind of give it a week or two to see how things shape up there.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I wonder what the effect of the fact that Sewald's best time came with a previous organization. Does that tend to affect these things, right? If you've looked good as a high leverage guy and sort of the closer in Seattle, and then you join Arizona and you're not quite as good. And there are they not necessarily going to think of him as Seattle Paul Sewald? Because I would say Seattle Paul Sewald should close over Kevin Ginkle. But the guy we've seen since the trade wasn't quite as good. You know, it was 17 2/3 innings. But if he was, you know, if his best years were also with Arizona, I wonder if that might affect things.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, especially what, you know, Sewald struggled in the World Series a bit too. So that's the last time we saw him pitching for Arizona. But yeah, by the time he gets back, I think, you know, Ginkle and Sewald would essentially have had the same amount of time as the closer in Arizona. So yeah, it really, you know, there shouldn't be any like feeling of like, oh, you know, he's been our closer here for multiple years. We need to put him back in that spot. I think that's, you know, that definitely plays a factor.
Yeah, I guess the counterpoint to my own point there is if Sewald was seen as the guy heading into the year, they had said that, right? This wasn't just assumed. It was known that Sewald was the guy. And I think, if it was only ever just assumed, then it's even easier to say that Ginkle's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't know if there's ever any sort of, you know, I don't know if Torey Lovullo came out and said, you know, Sewald's the guy here. I think it might have just been assumed because, you know, that's how things ended. But yeah, that's another, you know, that's a point too. It comes down to how well Ginkle's throwing by the time Sewald gets back. But if he's throwing well, I don't see why, you know, there's any reason to push Sewald back into the closer role when, you know, Ginkle's probably your closer of the future.
And so that situation contrasts with the situation in Milwaukee, where Devin Williams is out for about half the year with stress fractures in his back. And Milwaukee pretty much immediately inserted Abner Uribe into the role, despite the fact that it looked like it just as easily could have been Yoel Piamps or Trevor Megill before the season. They did not go with a committee and let them fight it out and see who was going to win the job, right? It was just pretty much Uribe from the start. What do you think that means going forward? Is it going to be a chance that he even keeps the job after Williams is back?
Well, I think that only happens kind of like we just talked about. It's like Williams has been there. He's been the closer there. So I'm sure they feel committed to him being the closer as long as he's healthy. But I feel like there's a couple things going on here where, you know, Uribe is probably their closer of the future. He's young, he's, you know, based on age and, you know, just his stuff is obviously electric. It's, you know, I like to see him commanded a little bit better, but the stuff's there to be a closer. I'm still not sure, you know, if Megill didn't have that weird concussion, I still kind of wonder how things would have played out by now. Because I think Megill right now is the best option there, just because the stuff's obviously elite, and you know he's got better command than Uribe. But you know, with Williams coming back in July, I do, and I've said this, you know, I've said this before, and this is like a 1% chance, but I don't, you know, I feel like there might be a shot that Williams doesn't pitch another game for the Brewers, because he's been pretty open about his feelings with that organization before, you know, after Hader was traded, after this previous injury, you know, he kind of, you know, made some remarks. I do wonder if, you know, he's a free agent, not after this year, but after next year. So, if, you know, I guess it depends on where Milwaukee is at in July, August. But I feel like Williams could work his way out of there with a trade. And then, yeah, then Uribe is, you know, all set for, you know, or McGill's, you know, depending on how things look in July. But yeah, I'm not so sure, certain that Williams is going to, you know, close out too many more games for Milwaukee.
Yeah, there were already some people who were drafting one of the other Brewers relievers before the Williams injury, just because they thought Williams could get traded right mid-season. And then, hey, I've got half a season of saves from, well, it was usually UL Piamp. So those people probably didn't end up too happy with the pick, but as a, you know, a late round pick, why not? So that's the upside of saves for Uribe is, hey, Williams could just get traded and there's a closer role available all season long. I guess what's the downside here? Because if we look at his numbers so far this year, he does have three saves, but a 5.40 ERA. Yeah, okay, we're talking about ERA in five innings, but fine. He's given up three runs in five innings, five strikeouts against three walks. His small sample performance there doesn't look like a closer necessarily. And if you look at his numbers last year, he had severe walk issues as well. Although last year, he also had a very good strikeout rate and a very good ERA. So I guess the question is, even though we if this works out really well, we've got 6 months of Abner Uribe closing. What are the odds we don't even have one more month? Are we sure that he's definitely the guy?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I want to see McGill healthy. I don't think Piamps is much of a threat, but McGill, if he's healthy, just has more of a closer feel to him with his fastball, curveball. You know, he's the size of Felix Bautista. He throws 99, better commands. I feel like Uribe is like Uribe is definitely a value. I mean, he's just, you know, throws a ton of sinkers. He gets a lot of ground balls. He's not necessarily a closer type. I mean, I guess we're seeing that more and more with like Clay Holmes and Jason Foley, but I just feel like Uribe probably isn't the best suited for the closer role right now. I think, you know, there's obviously, he's young, it's his first full year really, it's you know, there's time for him to figure things out and, you know, get a little bit more swing and miss and less walk into his repertoire. But yeah, I think McGill probably is someone worth keeping an eye on. I mean, probably not rostering yet, but he should be back early next week, hopefully from his concussion. And then, yeah, see how he looks and see how Uribe looks and keep a close eye on it.
All right, so definitely not a situation that we could consider resolved for the whole season in any way. Two more situations where the obvious closer is currently out. Yoan Duran in Minnesota. He's working his way back from an oblique and seems to maybe have pretty similar timeline to Paul Sewald. Mm-hmm. It's just Griffin Jacks there for another couple weeks, and then it's going to be Duran. I don't think there's any chance that Duran loses his job when he comes back, like we talked about with Sewald.
Yeah, I think Duran, once he's back, that's it. He's, as long as he's healthy, Duran is the closer there. So there's no concern about someone taking over here, as good as Griffin Jacks is, because Griffin Jacks probably could be a closer at some other places. But even still, I don't, it seems like they're going with a three-man committee here for the time being with Jax, Brock Stewart, and Steven Okert. Okert's gotten the last save, and I think he has actually the last two save opportunities, or he's been in the ninth inning a few times here, where I think if there's two lefties coming up in the ninth, they're going to go with Okert instead of, you know, Jax or Stewart. So, you know, I still think Jax is the one to roster in most leagues. In deeper leagues, though, like, you know, Brock Stewart's going to at least give you good ratios and strikeouts, and Okert could probably give you a couple sneaky saves if, you know, the Twins are going up against a left-handed heavy team.
All right, we'll get to some in-season strategy talk at the end, but I would bet if you're in one of those deep leagues, this sort of bullpen is the type of bullpen you're looking at, right? The type where there's three or four guys who will get you at least three to five saves and who put up good ratios, all of them are suddenly interesting, right, in a deep league.
Yeah, as long as Minnesota's playing well, they're getting a little banged up right now. But, I think between those three, you're not going to lose much because Stewart and Jax are just really good pitchers. They're not going to blow up your ratios. And even Okert, you know, Okert's a good strikeout guy. And, you know, again, he's the top lefty there, so he should get some saves.
All right. And then our last injury situation, Toronto, Jordan Romano. He is a good start or just started his rehab assignment as he works his way back from a fairly minor elbow issue. It's been what both Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia have gotten, I think, some saves now. Garcia got one yesterday. So I put Chad Green down on the outline, but I think this is a situation just like the last one where some guys will get some saves and then the closer's coming back. So don't get too excited.
Yeah, I think here, especially it sounds like Romano's back early next week or early this week coming up. So not, you know, I think Chad Green's probably kind of about to lose his value. And Yimi Garcia's actually pitched really well. If you don't mind not getting saves, he's been pretty great as far as ratios and strikeouts go so far. But yeah, it's not someone that you need to roster in outside of like deeper 15, 16 team leagues.
All right, and we have now cleared out all of the relatively clear situations. We've got half the show left to talk about the confusing ones. So let's jump right in with the Chicago Cubs. I've got first, I should mention, we've split this confusing teams up into two groups. These are the ones where I do think there is a clear top guy, and a few of these guys maybe belonged in the first group where he's that clear that I should have just called him the closer. But the Cubs with Adbert Alzolay fall into this situation where I think there's a clear top guy, but I'm really curious whether you're willing to call that top guy a closer or just more a preferred reliever. And so with Craig Counsell being, you know, a modern manager in Chicago, I wasn't totally sure how things were going to go. And Alzolay is definitely getting most of the save chances, but not necessarily always being used as a traditional closer. So what category would you throw him into right now?
I think he's probably at this point in that first group because it's one of those cases where we're hearing something different from the manager, and then we're seeing something different from what we're hearing from the manager. It's you know, Counsell said that they weren't going to commit to a closer, but so far, Alzolay has been the only guy they've used in the ninth inning, really. It does seem like there is a clear-cut pecking order there. I thought it might have changed after Merriweather got hurt, just because maybe they would want to use Alzolay as more of that high-leverage fireman type because he's their best reliever. But he got another save last night. It seems like he's pretty locked in there, and I don't think Hector Neris is much of a threat.
Yeah, it looked like he was struggling early, maybe, and he was going to lose some chances. Alzolay, if he, you know, he came in one game, I think it was Neris faced the heart of the order in the eighth, and then Alzolay got the bottom of the order and struggled. And so you wonder, were they just using Neris against the toughest batters and leaving Alzolay for the end, and what direction is this going to go? But so far, close enough to a conventional closer that we can count him as one. How about on the other side of Chicago, Michael Kopech? I mean, he's got both of the saves for the White Sox. Is that still in both of their wins, or have they managed a third win by now? He's got a save in 100% of the White Sox wins. So by one definition, that's as close as you can get to a conventional closer, but they're also using him, you know, for 5-6 outs pretty often, and they might just not get enough save chances to even ever name a closer. So what do you think Michael Kopech's job title is right now?
I think he's the closer. I think this is, I mean, him and Mason Miller, I feel like, are in the same little category where they're, you know, starters turn relievers on bad teams who are probably not going to get a ton of save chances. So, but, you know, but when they do get save chances, especially because their bullpens aren't deep, they're probably going to go, you know, eighth and ninth inning. They're going to get six outs, which is, you know, the last time Kopech pitched, I mean, he was absolutely electric, sitting 100 miles per hour. He threw 24 pitches in over two innings, no base runners, four strikeouts. threw 23 fastballs to one slider, and this fastball was sitting at 100 miles per hour. So I think, you know, both those guys are kind of in that, you know, they're going to be very volatile week to week, but they could still get close to that 20 save mark, give you a bunch of strikeouts because they're going to be throwing multiple innings. They're probably throw more than 60 innings. And, you know, hopefully, you know, ratio shouldn't be too bad from them. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued by Kopech. I would definitely roster him right now. It's just, you know, the other thing to look at here is he's a free agent after next year. White Sox aren't clearly not going anywhere. Do they sell high at the deadline this year, which could be why he's, you know, seeing this usage in the closer role, because that's going to boost his value. So, yeah, I do wonder if he gets traded, and then, you know, he probably won't be closing wherever he goes at the deadline. But for now, you know, worth a look in any league where he's available.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask that. That includes even the shallower leagues, I think, right? Because he was available in the majority of, like, Yahoo leagues last I checked. And people might be thinking, well, I only want two closers. I don't want one of them to be a guy who might only get me 18 saves or something. But I think his ratios are probably going to be good enough. It feels weird to say that about Michael Kopech, given that we've seen, you know, some not good enough from him. But last time he was a reliever, he was really good. And so I'm pretty willing to just buy into Michael Kopech, elite shutdown reliever.
Yeah, as long as he's, I mean, that's the thing. Even the last time he was a reliever, he was averaging like 97. And then he moved into the rotation. And last year he was around 95. And now he's just sitting at 100, which came out of nowhere, which is exciting but also concerning, because I don't know how long that's gonna last with him staying healthy. But as long as he's, you know, as long as this is happening, it's worth a look on the wire, and just you know, ride it as long as it lasts, I guess.
All right, how about our next somewhat confusing situation here, Colorado? Justin Lawrence, is he just the guy? I mean, not that I would ever advocate for rostering a Rocky closer in any situation. If you had to, it's Justin Lawrence. Is he at least a closer?
I guess, yeah, for now, all the tea leaves read that way. He hasn't been able to successfully close out a game so far. And as far as who, you know, Tyler Kinley hasn't been good. The two names to keep an eye on here, and again, it's Colorado, and I would stay away from this as far as, you know, as much as you can. But, you know, Mears and Vodnik are kind of interesting there. But it's really a situation, yeah. Like, I wouldn't try to stay away unless you're in a 16-team roto, maybe. Like, then you can try to get the saves from Lawrence, whatever comes up. But, yeah, I'd probably stay away from this.
Yep, not much interest from me there at all. The next one up here, probably should have just gone in the first category. The Angels, Carlos Estevez. When I made this outline, Robert Stevenson had not yet suffered an injury in his rehab appearance. And so I put him here because, hey, it's Carlos Estevez, but is it really for more than a week or two? But for now, Carlos Estevez, has he pitched well enough that he's the guy until somebody else gets healthy and outpitches him?
Yeah, I think it comes. I mean, he's lost his biggest competition, and both Stevenson and Jose Soriano moved to the rotation. So, you know, now it's really just Matt Moore who maybe could take over the role at some point. But yeah, he's got next to no competition. He's just, you know, Estevez is just, he's just not good. He's just really not that good. He hasn't been good. But there's no competition. So it's, you know, even if he's, you know, even if all the underlying stuff continues to look really bad for him, there's still, it's not impossible for him to be like that, you know, the 2019, 2020 Alex Colome, who, you know, had like horrible underlying metrics, but he was still had, you know, a good ERA, good ratios and 30 saves or whatever. So it's possible for him to be valuable. And definitely with Stevenson having the setback, definitely helps his value.
Yep, for sure. Got him at least one place. Not happy about it, but I'm glad that I'm getting saves, I guess.
Yeah.
We will continue our tour of the confusing bullpen situations right after this message from On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights? Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On-demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With on-demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fee, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the on-demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Back with the fantasy baseball here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. My guest Rick Graham and I are finishing up figuring out what all of the teams are doing with their closer situations. We've gone through most of the easy ones and some of the confusing ones. Next up here is the Los Angeles Dodgers. Evan Phillips, we heard before the season that he would get the brunt of the saves, and that's true. He looks pretty closer-ish to me, but I'm putting him here because of the way the Dodgers are talking about the situation. I think you can be pretty happy with the five saves you've gotten from him so far if you drafted him, but do you expect his usage going forward to be closer-ish or not quite?
Yeah, I mean, I do, as long as they don't add anyone here. And that's the thing. That's the you can't really predict, you know, what team's going to trade for who and whatnot. But it's the Dodgers. We know how aggressive they are. They're going to, you know, do whatever they can to win a World Series this year. So, but for the time being, I mean, Evan Phillips is just so good. He's so underrated. It doesn't seem like there's any competition there for him right now. I mean, you might see a save go to Joe Kelly or Hudson or Brazier even now and then, but I think, you know, Phillips is pretty locked into the ninth inning role. And, you know, as long as he's the closer there, he should be a top 10 guy, top 10 closer for this season, as long as he's there.
Yeah, we could even see the odd save go to Denelson Lamet, and then he gets DFA'd like the next day or something, right? Wasn't that what that was?
Yeah.
Weird one. Just when you're learning, oh, that's where Denelson Lamet is. He's on the Dodgers. He might actually be interesting. Oh, never mind. I don't need to know that anymore. So if the Dodgers are not quite locked into using Phillips as the, you know, 90% save share guy or whatever it is on most teams, even if they use other guys a little bit more often, they also win more games than anybody else. So, like you said, Phillips can end up easily a top 10 guy anyway, as long as he ends up the preferred option. How about Tanner Scott in Miami? He has 100% of the team's saves. He's got one save, but he's also looked like Tanner Scott. What do you think's going on here? Is he going to get the next save and the one after that and the one after that?
This is okay. So this one is I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. First of all of the Marlins, the bullpen, most of their pitchers right now cannot throw strikes. Everyone kind of looks bad in that pitching staff. But as far as Scott goes, so yeah, he brought his walk rate down to under 8% last year. A big part of that was him throwing first pitch strikes. Which, you know, he upped his first pitch strike rate to 67% last year. So I was wondering, oh, wait, was it down this year? Is that why he's struggling? But no, his first pitch strike is at 64%, which is above average. That's pretty good. It's just hitters are not swinging against him. He's, you know, Scott actually has his own percentage of 42% right now, which is like 15th out of 30 closers. So he's right in the middle of the pack as far as strike throwing goes. But no one is swinging at it. His, you know, zone swing is at 49%. So hitters are only swinging 49% of the time when he does throw strikes. And swing rate, total swing rate is at 34%, which is really low. So it's just a matter of, you know, he's still getting first pitch strikes, but then he's trying to get hitters to chase a little bit and they're not. So I just, you know, just as long as he just starts trusting his stuff a little bit, because his stuff is elite. I mean, you know, stuff plus rating is, you know, top five among closers. It's just, you just throw your, just try to throw strikes with your stuff, because it's, you're going to succeed as long as you're throwing strikes. So I think he's a good buy low candidate here because I don't see any other options. Like I said, the rest of that bullpen struggling. Nardi struggled. Bender's been okay, but he still doesn't look like, you know, Anthony Bender from 2 years ago. The only other thing is, like, if AJ Puck comes back into the bullpen, it looks like AJ Puck did in the bullpen last year for the first half of the season, then there might be some competition. But I think Scott could be a potential buy low. I just need him to start throwing strikes. Just trust your stuff, man. It's so good.
Yeah, I would think that if one of those other Marlins you mentioned was actually pitching, you know, quite right. well to open the season, maybe would there be more of a conversation, because Scott, he's just never been able to be reliable for a full 6 months. He's been great for 2 or 3 months at a time. So it probably wouldn't surprise us if he pitches his way out of the role at some point. Like you said, maybe that's less risk of it happening by the end of April. But do you see him as someone who they would continue keeping fit? Like, if he has a bad month, are they going to just turn it over to someone else, just anybody? Or is it really going to have to be somebody else takes it from him?
I think there's going to have to be someone else who steps up. I think he deserves, from like how good he was last year, he deserves a little bit more of a leash here just to get things going again. You know, whatever tweak they made last year to get him to get his walk rate down, just like maybe they have to like look at that again. And again, it starts with first pitch strikes, and then after that, just get 0-2 on guys, and then we'll start chasing. I just trust your stuff. You know, I think the best, you know, the most competition he's going to get is probably from Anthony Bender, who it gives him at least a right-handed option. Maybe they start splitting that role a little bit. Until we see either Bender, you know, his velo's way down from 2 years ago. He's still getting some swings and misses at least, but it's not really anything to get excited about right now.
All right. Well, I think we can breeze through the next few because we've already alluded to them in some way, and I really want to get to the most confusing four at the end. But Mason Miller in Oakland, you already mentioned, is somebody you view basically the same as Michael Kopech, right? Not necessarily officially yet the closer, but he will effectively be the guy, and he's very much usable even if his team's bad.
Yeah, it's just you're going to, you know, get one save a week. Maybe or it's going to be volatile, the saves. But as far as, you know, everything else, he's a freak. I mean, he throws 104 miles per hour. He's basically Yoan Duran, just minus a good team situation. So, yeah, I feel like he's probably a must roster in every league right now.
Sounds right to me. And then in Pittsburgh, David Bednar, can I put him back in the obvious closer bit? He's had a rocky start to the season after having some lat issues in spring, so that pushed him down into this tier for me. Are we pretty worried about Aroldis Chapman, or is this just David Bednar's job?
I feel like Bednar's pretty safe. He should be fine. It's the injury, the kind of lingering injury concerns are the only thing that I worry about. But, you know, those two blown saves recently are kind of bad luck. Stuff is the same as it always was. I think he should be fine. And Chapman, you know, Chapman's always going to be Jekyll and Hyde, where he's going to be so good for 2 weeks, and then he's going to be so bad for the next 2 weeks where he can't find the plate. So there's not a ton of concern with Chapman there.
All right, so as long as David Bednar stays off the injured list, probably fine there. How about Seattle? Andres Munoz is the top guy, but Seattle doesn't really do a closer necessarily, although Paul Sewald was close to one in the past, and the thought was that Andres Munoz would be, I think the thought was that he'd be basically what Evan Phillips is now, right? That's what people were drafting him as. But now we've got a couple saves for Ryan Stanek. What's going on here? I think this one needs a deeper dive.
Yeah, I think this is just this is kind of how Scott Service, even when Sewald was there, it was never full time as a closer. He was, you know, I remember going to like a Red Sox game and against Seattle once, and Sewald came in the seventh inning up with Seattle up 3-1. I'm like, why is he coming in right now? And that's just kind of how, like, you know, you look at it further. That's how Scott Service uses his closer. It's more of a, you know, when's the top of the order? When's the middle of the order going to be up? That's when he's going to use his guy. And that's so, you know, Munoz isn't going to get the bulk of the saves, or he's going to get the bulk of the saves there. It just might not be 30. But I feel like most, you know, where he was getting drafted for the most part, I still feel like that wasn't, we weren't really expecting him to get 30 plus saves. So, you know, for now, Stanek even is a, you know, a deep league option because he might vulture a save or two every week. But that could also change when Matt Brash gets back, which, you know, it sounds like he's going to go on a rehab assignment next week. So Brash could be an interesting pickup in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and so I think some people were drafting Munoz maybe as if he was going to get 30. Yeah. I think the people who are moving him up within their reliever rankings, just saying he's the top guy there, and look at his strikeout and walk rates, he belongs with these guys who have similar numbers and are the top guy. But I think if you kept him a few spots later where many people had him, then yes, definitely. So I guess he's definitely more than just the top guy in a committee, because he's less than Evan Phillips even. Do we have words for whatever these roles are for these guys?
I feel like Phillips and even, you know, maybe at this point, maybe even Alzolay are more locked into save chance, seeing the bulk of the save chances than Munoz. But even if Munoz is getting 70% of the save chances, 75% of the save chances, you should still hit this 20 save mark if he stays healthy. He's really good. Obviously it's never been a question of like his stuff or how good he is. It's just, you know, how is what's the usage going to look like with Service, you know, liking to use his closer in more high leverage spots than just strictly the ninth inning.
Yep. And I guess if you thought that Munoz is so good that he's going to convince Service to change his mind and use a conventional closer, well, this past week has proven otherwise. The next and final situation in this group, Tampa Bay, Pete Fairbanks, same situation as always, right, with the Rays. He's also in this, you know, Evan Phillips, Andrés Muñoz kind of range, I would think.
So I think this has kind of become a bit of a like a misconception. Fairbanks has, like, they have, as long as Fairbanks has been healthy the last 2 years, he has been closing out games. They don't really, like, I think, and I honestly think this is partially to do with him because of his health concerns. I think they're just like, okay, he is going to only pitch the ninth inning. You know, we don't want to mess around with him, with his role too much. So I think that's part of it. I mean, obviously he's like really, he's elite when he's healthy. When he's right, he's currently not right. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know. I don't want to say Coors broke him, but after that Coors outing, it's been kind of shaky to say the least. I think it's probably just rust. He had a really slow spring. He didn't do much in the spring. They were trying to preserve him for the regular season, which makes sense, but it's kind of showing now that, like, he still has to knock off some of this rust. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy, you stick with him for now. You know, when he's good, he's, you know, top five closer in baseball. It's just, you know, we need to get him there before we can really trust him.
All right. So basically a closer there for Pete Fairbanks. Then we've got four teams who I'm not sure what's going on really right now. The Tigers, Royals, Phillies, and Rangers. Some of these you might have put in the previous group, but let's see. We'll go over all of them. Detroit, I don't think we can say Jason Foley is a closer. I don't think so. I didn't want to put this as a similar situation to some that we just talked about, where there's a top guy and we're not sure whether he's a closer or a committee lead. I think, do we just say Jason Foley is more of the top guy in a committee, or am I reading this wrong and you'd have him as more similar to the Adbert Alzolays and Evan Phillipses of the world?
No, I think that's, I mean, this is a full, I mean, and this is one of those situations where AJ Hinch has been, you know, very persistent on saying this is going to be a committee. There's not going to be one guy in the ninth inning. And after the first couple outings, it looked like Foley was the only guy they were using in the ninth, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of changed a little bit lately. So I feel like Foley's the preferred closer there, but not, it's kind of a situation like Philadelphia, which we'll talk about in a little bit, where Foley's the head of the committee, but there's still going to be two, maybe three other guys who, you know, sneak in saves here and there. So yeah, I still think Foley's needs to be rostered. He's been so good. The increased velo has helped out a lot. He's like a souped up Clay Holmes, kind of, where he can, you know, throw 101 mile per hour sinkers, and it's starting to lead to more swing and miss too from him. So I still like Foley, but, you know, 20 saves might be the max for him.
Right. I think you got to, with a guy like him, though, you got to pick him up if he's available. Right. He won't be anymore. You had to pick him up a couple weeks ago, and I think you got to keep using him in your lineup, even though you're not sure he's going to get the save in the ninth inning, which is annoying, but I think you got to use him in most places. How about elsewhere in that Detroit bullpen? If you were to be picking up some other members of that committee in a deeper league, Alex Lang, Andrew Chafin, or hey, Shelby Miller? Thoughts on Shelby Miller, our question here?
Yeah, I do think Miller's probably the next in line. If I were to roster a second or another Detroit, you know, reliever right now, it'd probably be Shelby Miller. Lang is still, you know, the command issues are just not going to go away with Lang. It's a shame because Lang has such, he's got great stuff, three great pitches. It's just, he can't throw strikes with them. So yeah, I think Miller is probably the second best option there. And then, yeah, you know, Chafin's going to see if they face two or three lefties in the ninth. I'm sure Chafin will get a, you know, a save chance here and there, but it's hard to predict that. I guess it's a team, depends on who they're playing. So if you're going into a weekend where they're playing a left-handed heavy team, maybe you pick up Chafin for the weekend and, you know, hope he gets the save out of it.
All right. That is the Detroit situation where Foley's in the lead, but no reason to believe he's going to be a traditional closer. How about in Kansas City? So far, we have two saves for James MacArthur, one for Will Smith, and one for Chris Stratton. Is this a situation where Will Smith was the capital C closer and now he's not and someone else is going to be that guy in a couple weeks? Or is this a situation where whether or not Will Smith was intended to be a closer, at this point it's a committee and it's going to stay that way?
I think this was, yeah, I think Smith was the closer capital C heading into the season. And I think he's just, at this point, he might just be cooked. It's just Velo was down. He was like throwing 89. He just, you know, wasn't able to get outs. I do think that, so I do think they want to go with one closer here if they can. It looks like James MacArthur's that guy now. He kind of got off to a rough start too. He was allowing a lot of hits, a little bit of bad luck involved, but I think MacArthur is pretty solid. I think he's worth a look in most leagues. He doesn't throw hard, but he, you know, he's 6'7". Gets great extension, so his fastball plays up a little bit because of that. And he's got, you know, two breaking balls that miss bats as well. So I think MacArthur's a sneaky ad for a Royals team that's played, you know, pretty well so far. And, you know, there could be some value here with their closer spot.
Would we go down to even shallow leagues with MacArthur? Because you got to have, you know, if you're in a 10 to 12 team league, you kind of want your relievers that you're using in your lineup to be pretty close to a true closer, right? Like we said, Jason Foley's probably above that line. Mm-hmm. Do you think that anybody in Kansas City gets to a place where you're actually happy to use them in a shallow league?
I think 12-teamers MacArthur makes sense. I think it's worth a look. 10-teamers a little bit tougher. I think more of a wait and see. Just because, I mean, the thing with MacArthur is it's not like he hasn't done this before. He proved last September he was maybe the best closer in baseball for the month of September. So he's like, you know, and then he had a really good spring too. So he's shown that he's capable of being like a really good closer here. It's just, you know, let's see if he can, you know, can sustain it for, you know, the rest of April. And then in 10-teamers, maybe we take a look.
All right, sounds fair to me. Just two more here. How about the Phillies? Jose Alvarado, the top guy with two saves. Jeff Hoffman and Gregory Soto each have a traditional save. Soto's may have been an extra inning one, I think. And then Ricardo Pinto had a multi-inning save, so we can ignore that one for these purposes. So Jose Alvarado, is he more of an Evan Phillips or more of a Jason Foley or more of a James MacArthur in terms of his role?
I think this is more of a Jason Foley type situation where it's going to be Alvarado getting the bulk of the saves. But it's going to be frustrating because there's going to be, you know, another three or four guys involved here. They even got, you know, they got a Ryan Kirkering back today who could also factor into this, but we already know Hoffman is going to factor in. Soto probably will. Sir Anthony Dominguez could, Matt Strom could. I mean, there's just a lot of pretty good relievers there that can steal saves from Alvarado. That said, Alvarado's still the one I want to roster if I can. But you're not going to get 30 saves here. it's going to be closer. It's like Foley. It's like you know, if you get 20, you'll be pretty lucky, and that'll be, you know, 20 saves with good ratios and a lot of strikeouts could be. It's still a pretty nice reliever to roster.
Yeah, that was my feeling about Alvarado heading into the season, which is why I didn't end up with him anywhere. Although I think if you still have him in a shallower league, I think his ratios are going to be good enough that even if he's, you know, like we talked about with Foley, even if he's not quite guaranteed to get that next save chance, you got to still use him in those deeper leagues. 15-teamer, Jeff Hoffman, you mentioned, would you be on him or Orion Kerkering if you had to get another Philly?
I think right now Hoffman, I do wonder, I feel like they used Hoffman differently last year, where, you know, last year he was kind of that fireman coming in the fifth inning when the starter starts to struggle. But this year he's been used later in games. I wonder if with Kerkering back that, you know, they kind of put Hoffman back into that role. But for now, Hoffman's really good as a reliever. I thought he could be a closer last year. Think he can be that secondary closer here. So I think Hoffman right now is the number two option. But yeah, it's going to see what they do with Kerkering now that he's back. I think, you know, obviously they're really high on him. They used him in, you know, pretty high leverage spots, even in the playoffs last year. He didn't have much experience. So yeah, Kerkering is a name to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Kerkering could easily find himself with 3 to 5 saves and good ratios. Right. It's just, it might be a pretty deep league before that gets particularly interesting, depending on how many relievers you need. Final bullpen here, Texas Rangers. This one, I don't think it's a committee, but Jose Leclerc, he just pitched in what? It was the sixth inning of a blowout. I think that's what it was. So is it David Robertson? Is it Kirby Yates? What's going on here in Texas?
Yeah, this is the one that's still a little bit up in the air. If I had to take a guess here, it looks like Kirby Yates is the next guy up. I think
over Robertson. All right.
Yeah, I think based on like usage from the last game where they used Yates in the ninth inning, and even before they removed Leclerc from the closer role, Yates was being used in the eighth inning. So I think they just kind of bumped those guys up. Yates obviously has closer experience. I think, you know, the issue with him last year, his walk rate was ridiculously high, but this year he's been fine with the walks. So yeah, I think Yates is worth a speculative ad in most places. It's just, I don't know what the upside is with him or what they're going to do with Leclerc, and Robertson could also sneak some saves in as well. I think they like Robertson more as that high leverage guy for the, you know, meat of the order, the end of games. So, you know, that could lead to Yates being, you know, a 25 plus save guy if he can take the role and run with it.
All right. So there was a question in here earlier. Can you rank Yates, Ryan Stanek, Jeff Hoffman, and Justin Lawrence? I think they might be ranked right there for me. If you're saying Yates is the favorite in Texas, because then Yates is actually having a shot at 25 plus saves the rest of the way. Whereas Stanek and Hoffman, to me, they're both guys who are just going to get a few while pitching pretty well. I might flip the order of those two, but maybe not. And then Lawrence, I just don't ever want to roster a Colorado closer, even if he's the closer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what you said. I think I would maybe flip Hoffman and Stanek. But yeah, I think Yates is the first guy. In save-only leagues, it's definitely Yates, because there's a chance he can just take this job and run with it. It's you know, we've seen him be a really good closer in the not-too-distant past. So his stuff still seems to be there. I think Yates could be a really good ad right now.
All right, and we are basically out of time here, but I did want to get in just a tiny bit of in-season reliever strategy question with you. Let's boil it down to one thing. What is the better strategy for keeping up in saves? Is it throwing 20%, 30% of your budget at somebody who looks like they're going to be the guy who's coming up? And let's say like Kirby Yates gets another save today and it's clearly, or gets his first save and it's clearly him. All right, everybody's going for him. I got to just be the guy because I need some saves. Do you tend to do that? You know, find a guy you're confident enough who deserves that big outlay and go for him? Or are you constantly getting the third man in line and hoping that one of them's going to eventually win the job?
I think it's a little bit of both depending on the situation. So, like, you know, I guess even going back to before the season started with, like, Milwaukee, when it's like there's three names, okay, like, I'll take whichever one I can get for the cheapest between McGill or Uribe and Piamps. But now a situation in Texas where I don't think that there's, you know, I think it's going to be Kirby Yates. I'd be willing to throw a little bit more money at him as a free agent because, you know, competition isn't, you know, there's not three names to choose from. But I do like, you know, I like kind of doing a little bit of both and kind of even like spreading it out a little bit where, you know, take a chance on some high upside non-closer relievers for cheap, see how things pan out in that bullpen. While at the same time, you know, I'll throw some money at, you know, a guy like Kevin Ginkle or Kirby Yates early in the year if they get a chance to close out games.
It's a tough question for me every year. These the top guys that come on early, they come so expensive. And just can you convince yourself to throw all that at Kevin Ginkle before we really know how long he's going to get the job? But there aren't many times, right, where you can get a guy for cheap and then he ends up being the guy. So
And that's this early in the season, too, especially with someone like Yates. It's like, well, it's not middle of the season where you can only expect, you know, maybe 10 or 12 saves. There's a chance, you know, he just ends the year as the closer there and has 25, 30 saves. So I think you got to be aggressive early if you're going to go that route of trying to, you know, throw your money at a guy who's taking over the role. But, you know, it's also you got to manage because, you know, after the trade deadline, there's usually at least five new closers or whatnot. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind as well. So I think it's a little, you know, you got to kind of take both approaches, but. I missed out on Ginkle and Foley by like $5 in a bunch of leagues. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just, you know, I'm kicking myself now. I should have just thrown the extra, you know, $6 at it. But yeah, it's one of those things you have to gauge early on in the season. And yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your thoughts on that. Thank you for your thoughts on all 30 bullpen situations around the league. I think we did a pretty good job getting through all of it in a little bit over an hour. Thank you very much for coming on. I'm looking forward to competing with you the rest of the year in NL Only Tout Wars, where I see you're off to a pretty good start, top half, and you've got Paul Skeens waiting in the wings. Just got Nick Lodolo back. Man, things are looking up.
Yeah, I think, you know, from that and that, I didn't spend a whole lot on, you know, top tier pitching, and hopefully Skeens can be a factor because, yeah, it's gonna be a grind that you know that. League's always a grind when it comes to finding deep pitching and, you know, deep bats as well. So it's a long year, but I like my team so far.
You got Skeens for offensively cheap in this one. Nobody wanted to throw him out early, right? And then he was just kind of there, and you got him for like four.
I got him for, I think it was even less. It was just, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was just like, he's fun. Like, it's like at the end of the day, at least it's a fun person, a fun arm to take a shot on. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was mad when you got him because you got him for way too cheap. But I was happy when you came on the show today. I think that was a great conversation. So thank you very much for talking all things bullpen. Thank you, listeners. Thank you to everybody who left comments. We'll be back all week on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.